From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, an independent budget watchdog weighs in on bringing down local property taxes. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a new poll on the closely watched 19th congressional district race, and a warning from environmental groups over a potential resurgence of shipments of crude oil through the Adirondacks. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. An independent budget watchdog group agrees with an idea that Republican candidate for governor Mark Molinaro has to bring down local property taxes. But it also says there's a trade-off to any potential savings. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Citizens Budget Commission is nonpartisan and does not endorse any political candidates, but the group does back an idea proposed by the GOP's Molinaro for a state takeover of county Medicaid costs. The group's Patrick Orecki says it would help alleviate New York's very high local property taxes.
New York's requirement on local districts to contribute about $7 billion per year to pay for a state-run Medicaid program is unique and counterintuitive and regressive as well.
He says the lowest income taxpayers contribute a higher proportionate share in property tax payments than higher income earners. For decades, the federal government paid for half of New York's total Medicaid budget. The state and its counties evenly split the remaining costs. In recent years, the state has capped the growth of the county's Medicaid costs at 3% per year, with the state paying for any amount above that. And since 2015, the county's costs for Medicaid have been frozen at $7.6 billion. Nevertheless, says Orecki, that hasn't solved the problem. He says New York still requires more local contributions to finance Medicaid services than all other states in the nation combined.
By freezing the local share, you also effectively freeze in the inequities that exist with just this financing mechanism overall.
Molinaro, who is the Dutchess County executive, says his plan could reduce property taxes by about one-third. Molinaro introduced the idea in late September.
Over 5 years, our plan will reduce the property tax burden on New Yorkers by almost 30%. Yes, almost 30%. Now, I know that there already are special interests in Albany that will tell you it's impossible. They'll say it will gut services. It won't.
Molinaro says his plan would also include ending unfunded mandates to counties, enacting a permanent state spending cap, and making the current 2% per year property tax cap permanent. He'd also curtail Governor Andrew Cuomo's economic development programs. They offer large grants to select private companies and cost billions of dollars. Orecki, with Citizens Budget Commission, has other ideas on how to pay for the state takeover. He says the state could increase the sales tax from 4% to nearly 6%, or the state could swap a portion of local sales tax revenue for the local Medicaid costs. But he says it can't just result in a cost shift from one type of regressive tax to another. Citizens Budget Commission also recommends getting rid of the STAR school property tax reduction program. STAR provides a political advantage to state lawmakers as rebate checks go to property owners just before Election Day. And Orecki says the state could try to absorb its costs through efficiencies. He points out that Cuomo, earlier in his term, formed a Medicaid redesign panel with all of the major stakeholders, and that resulted in savings. But he admits none of the choices are easy.
All of these options are difficult. No matter which way you try to implement or finance the state takeover, there's going to be some opportunity cost.
Cuomo is opposed to state takeover of Medicaid, saying it would lead to undesirable spending cuts or higher state income taxes.
Either you'd have to raise taxes on the state side, or you'd have to cut education.
The Citizens Budget Commission report also finds some good news for state and local government finances. Enrollment in Medicaid has leveled off in recent years, and it's expected to remain flat for the next few years, slowing the growth of the program. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week,
you spoke with Assemblymember Deborah Glick. She is from New York City, the Greenwich Village area, and I see this morning that as a result of the Working Families Party voting, Alan, to endorse Governor Andrew Cuomo and Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul after its preferred ticket of Cynthia Nixon and Janami Williams were defeated in the September 13th Democratic primary, pitting what? Nixon against Glick?
We love Deborah Glick. She's a great assemblywoman. She's the chair of the Higher Education Committee. She's one of the best of the legislators. We had her on the Capitol Connection, and it's just beyond belief what they're doing. There is a push on to take Cynthia Nixon off the working families ballot. It's just dumb. The people there put them on. Yesterday, the news media were interviewing people in the Working Families Party, and they were saying, well, we don't like Cuomo, but I guess we have to do this. The people who are running the place, the labor people who give all the money to the party, are having their way. They'll put Cuomo in there. Hey, if those people wanted Cynthia Nixon on that ballot, that's democracy. She should stay there. And I don't like it. So what they do, David, is they put her up against, on the working families line, against Deborah Glick, who is this wonderful state legislator, incredibly talented, incredibly good. And they say, we know that the only way we can take her off the gubernatorial ballot is to put her on this assembly ballot, and everybody will know not to elect Cynthia Nixon. Well, if you were Deborah Glick, you wouldn't feel all that good about it. Cynthia Nixon is now a widely known person. Glick will have to go out and campaign as she's never campaigned before. We would hope that Cynthia Nixon will come right out and say, hey, I don't want to be elected. This was just the way that politics works or something like that. So that's what's happened. I find it utterly reprehensible on the part of the Working Families Party, which are, after all, supposed to be and are self-touted as the decent people who really do care about cleaning up politics. Apparently not.
One of the races, Alan, that we haven't focused so much on is the Attorney General's race, and that seems to be the closest in the polls right now. You've got Letitia James, which was the governor's handpicked candidate who won the primary, and one of the other major candidates in the race, the Republican Keith Wolford, who's from Western New York, a lawyer and an African-American. He seems to be making some waves.
Yeah, but he's still 10 points behind. It's going to be a blue wave. It'll be extraordinary if he can win. There will be a lot of people who think he should win, because the one thing you really do need is an attorney general who will be keeping an eye on the governor. A lot of people thought that one of the reasons that Tish James became so important to the governor was just because it was his person and that she wouldn't have the guts to go up against him. She claims she will. Time will tell. Or as the old saying goes, I'm from Missouri, show me. So I think there are enough people around who are showing that they have some suspicions about this. And I think that's why, you know, he's like 10 points behind. But 10 points is a lot of points in New York, especially in a blue year like this.
Stick with the blue year theme. And two major races for Congress include both the Mohawk Valley down into the Binghamton area, which is the Anthony Brindisi-Claudia Tenney race, Brindisi the Democrat, Tenney the Republican, and the 19th Congressional District, Republican John Faso and Antonio Delgado, the Democrat, where some of these ads, I've seen some critics saying, with a racist tinge, some of the worst they've ever seen in politics. But a new AARP poll shows the Democrats, that blue wave you're speaking of, now leading the Republicans.
Polls are one thing, snapshots in time. The only great poll, as we say, is on Election Day, and that's so true. Right now, the initial polls were showing Faso winning, the ones we had seen, but only by a few points. Now we see this AARP poll, which shows that Faso is losing, and that margin seems to be getting a little bit bigger. I find it very difficult to make an assessment of this race based on the fact that you've had two fairly popular Republican incumbents there. If the Democrats want to win this, they really have to haul their keisters out to the polling places. And the history has not been that great. On the other hand, there are an awful lot of people who are unhappy with Donald Trump, particularly in New York State. And one would think that that could help elect Delgado. Now, David, let me just say that these ads against Delgado are racist. They are. They show him in a hoodie. They show him, you know, rapping. This is a Rhodes Scholar, one of the brightest people around. It's disgusting. And of course, when confronted with this, John Faso, who I've known for many, many years, says, it's not me, it's those Republican congressional guys who are sending this in here. No, I'm afraid not. I'm afraid what happens is, if it's your campaign and you say cut it out, people cut it out. So the way that I see it is that it's going to be close in these races because of the Democratic blue wave. Question is, will it be close enough to elect the Democrats?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartung. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Hudson Valley residents had a chance to weigh in on the legalization of adult-use marijuana in New York. They did so in Newburgh at one of 17 listening sessions being held across the state. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
In July, the State Department of Health released a report finding that positive effects outweighed negative effects in regulating adult-use marijuana. Now it's the public's turn to deliver opinions. Monday's session held at the SUNY Orange Newburgh campus was the first in the Hudson Valley. Ursula Clancy is a nurse.
Regulating pot, just like regulating alcohol and cigarettes, never really made a difference in my Brooklyn neighborhood because we still got cigarettes and alcohol whenever we wanted it.
She and others expressed worry about minors getting hold of pot more easily.
And they're going to be everywhere for kids to get it and for people to smoke it and become dumber, remember? So I think this is not going to make our communities better.
Others who oppose legalization argued there would be an increased risk of motor vehicle and other accidents. George Dallas is a pharmacist at Curaleaf's Medical Marijuana Dispensary in Newburgh. He has a different concern.
Any conversation about legalizing recreational cannabis in New York needs to also be a conversation about protecting the medical cannabis program.
And he urges the state to allow for more medical marijuana dispensaries. Sandra Houston facilitates the listening sessions. She is consultant to the governor's executive chamber.
We're hearing a variety of voices and definitely some themes. So I can't highlight a particular community, but we're definitely hearing a variety of voices, which is great. We wanted diverse voices and we wanted community members to come out to give us their input. So we've had great turnout.
She declined to detail any themes. Gail Goodman is a Dutchess County resident who says she worked in the criminal justice system for years.
The thing to do is to legalize it. It's to regulate it. It's to make sure our kids are informed about it. I'm more concerned, truthfully, about the people who are texting on the road that they're going to hit me than I am about somebody that might have had a toke or two before they left the house.
She adds,
but my main complaint here is we're ignoring reality. As I say, it's not a partisan issue.
The Green Party has long been a proponent of legalizing marijuana. Orange County resident Jessica Gokey is a Green Party member.
So what I'd like to see happen is education. I'd like to see the ignorance extinguished. I'd like to see the opportunities that have been lost for our farmers every day that this is not legalized. I think our farmers could benefit the most.
In fact, others say legalization could revitalize the local farming community in the Hudson Valley, and with its black dirt region in Orange County, the area could become a prime growing spot.
This is not about anything other than adults who make responsible decisions today about their own bodies with cigarettes and alcohol, which is a poison, also being able to make those same responsible decisions about cannabis, something that they can't OD on.
Rockland County Health Commissioner Patricia Rupert opposes legalization. Speaking also for the State Association of County Health Officials, she requested a seat at the table as regulations are developed. Again, Houston, the session facilitator.
The input will be shared with the work group that's been formed by the governor, and they will use the information in drafting of legislation.
The 17 two-hour listening sessions began in September and wrap up October 17th in New Rochelle in Westchester County. For coverage of an earlier session in Albany, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
General Electric is replacing its chairman and chief executive officer after a little over a year on the job. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports the change has raised interest in Schenectady, the former home of GE's headquarters.
Word came Monday that John Flannery was out as chairman and CEO of the Boston-based company. GE, despite its corporate holdings, lengthy history, and large presence in New York and New England, was dropped from the Dow Jones Industrial Average in June. GE warned it will miss its profit forecasts this year. Flannery, who succeeded longtime CEO Jeff Immelt, is leaving the company after a failed restructuring plan. Independent Schenectady City Councilman Vince Riggi took the news in stride.
If a baseball team goes bad, the manager loses his job. And with the way the stock market crashed for GE, it doesn't surprise me. And hopefully that's going to be a plus for Schenectady with a new CEO. I don't think it can get any worse as far as that goes. So I'm hoping that's going to be a good thing, and they're going to replace him with a good CEO that's going to bring GE back.
GE has named a replacement, a man who has been called one of the most successful CEOs in corporate America, H. Lawrence Culp Jr., former head of Washington, D.C.-based Danaher Corporation, which describes itself as a Fortune 500 science and technology innovator. Culp said in a statement, quote, GE remains a fundamentally strong company with great businesses and tremendous talent. It is a privilege to be asked to lead this iconic company. We will be working very hard in the coming weeks to drive superior execution, and we will move with urgency. We remain committed to strengthening the balance sheet. Schenectady Mayor Gary McCarthy is adopting a wait-and-see attitude.
They're going through a period of a little bit of challenge. They've dealt with these things in the past and want to make sure that the Schenectady facility remains competitive globally.
Periodic layoffs have become part of GE culture. In August, GE laid off 200 hourly workers at its power unit in Schenectady, the latest in a series of cuts to the local workforce dating back to 2013. GE was founded in Schenectady in 1892. Employment in its original headquarters is around 4,000, many of those roles in engineering, marketing, and procurement. Another 1,500 scientists and technicians work at the company's main research lab in neighboring Niskayuna.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new report from environmental groups in the region warns of a potential resurgence of shipments of crude oil through the Adirondacks. Its recommendations include a call for a federal ban of oil by rail transport through the region. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
Transport of Bakken crude oil by rail along tracks adjacent to Lake Champlain to terminals at the Port of Albany peaked in 2014. According to the new report, Danger on the Tracks, Oil by Rail's Threat to Lake Champlain and the Adirondack Region, market trends indicate oil prices will increase, leading to an increase in oil train traffic through the region. Environmental Advocates of New York Air and Energy Director Connor Bambrick says as oil prices rise, the cost of moving oil via rail is more attractive, so the region should be prepared for a steep influx of oil trains.
There is a very high risk of that. There is not currently the pipeline infrastructure in place to move the oil, so rail is really the only option. As the prices make it more attractive to do so, I think we'll see companies look to ramp up those efforts again.
Bambrick says the tankers remain unsafe.
There were a number of safety protocols ordered to be put in place back in 2015 that included the retirement or the retrofitting of some of the more dangerous rail cars, the DOT-111s, and also requirements that pneumatic braking systems be installed. And what we saw just this week is that the Trump administration decided to roll back that requirement for a new or modern braking system, thus increasing the risk of accidents.
Vermont Natural Resources Council Energy and Climate Program Director Johanna Miller says the oil would once again be transported along one of the most treasured natural resources in the region.
Not only is it what's in these oil trains and tankers, some of the dirtiest energy, it also puts at risk Lake Champlain, which is a primary driver of our state's economy and is also, under threat from other pollution, which means that it just has the potential to exacerbate a significant challenge already and again threaten one of our most important natural resources, as well as an economic engine for the state of Vermont and the state of New York.
The report calls for a permanent federal ban of oil trains through the region. National Wildlife Federation Senior Counsel Jim Murphy acknowledges that will be a challenge given the priorities of the White House.
Still worth calling for that. Is that the ultimate solution that's needed? And the fact of the matter is that with dropping oil demand, with increases in efficiency, with some of the things the region, frankly, is doing to wean itself off oil and to get to cleaner sources of energy, we're at the point where we don't need to bring oil through remote, risky regions like the Adirondacks and the Lake Champlain Valley. So we feel that's the ultimate fix. That said, short of a federal fix, we urge the state and local areas to continue doing all they can to try to reduce the risk.
Among the recommendations the report offers to eliminate or reduce oil train transport are including a price on carbon, a low-carbon fuel standard, keeping strong federal fuel economy standards, and imposing stringent safety standards on all pipeline and rail projects. A link to the report is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1840. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.